From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is off this week. I'm Bob Garfield. On Wednesday, the nation's most restrictive abortion ban was signed into law in Alabama, making it a crime punishable by up to 99 years in prison to perform an abortion there. No exceptions for rape or for incest.
The Alabama bill sponsor says it was designed to be contested and ultimately make its way to the now conservative-leaning Supreme Court.
We can't get a heartbeat bill until we get Roe versus Wade revisited and turned over.
Alabama's law was a defiant attempt to bait the Supreme Court into reconsidering what has for 46 years been considered settled law. But it is far, far, far from the only one passed this year, or even this week.
The Missouri Senate passing one of the most restrictive abortion bills.
The governor of Mississippi signed into law a bill that would prohibit abortions after 6 weeks.
The bill was signed into law in Arkansas that bans most abortions.
The Ohio governor signing what critics condemn as the most restrictive abortion law in the country.
Georgia today joined a growing number of states that have made it illegal to have an abortion once a heartbeat is detected in the womb.
By ignoring settled law, the so-called heartbeat bills are destined to be quickly challenged in the courts. This is not legislative carelessness. Supporters are betting that the new conservative high court majority, fashioned by Donald Trump for the express purpose of overturning Roe, will seize on the opportunity. It's a gambit that defies not only the law of the land, but 46 years of anti-abortion strategy, which typically created obstacles to cut off access to abortions. Instead, the so-called heartbeat bills are largely the brainchild of one woman, Janet Porter, a longtime culture warrior who has suddenly emerged from the fringes to dominate the political debate. Porter was recently profiled by The Guardian's health reporter Jessica Glenza, who joins me now. Jessica, welcome to OTM.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
Now, if we were to judge people by the company they keep, Porter has been allied with Iowa Congressman Steve King, former Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, both of these politicians, notorious bigots, disgraced televangelist Jim Baker. What is her reputation in the Republican Party and among conservatives in general?
Well, I would just point out that she was also at one point the spokeswoman for disgraced former U.S. Senate candidate Roy Moore as well. Among Republicans, she's seen as very extreme and fringe. She's very divisive within Ohio, which is where she was doing most of her advocacy for a long time, to the point that she caused sort of a rift between herself and other anti-abortion groups. And when the bill that she advocated for a decade finally passed, she was not invited to the bill signing. So she moved from this establishment position when she first began advocacy to really far on the right, to the point that it's sort of outside of the mainstream of most of the Republican Party, but still an important part of the base that is voting for Republicans.
Now, I want to ask you more about Porter as a personality and a political operative, but I think this would probably be a good opportunity to recall what the legal standards are today through Roe v. Wade and the very question of when abortions can be banned.
Roe versus Wade right now provides women the constitutional right to obtain an abortion up to the point of what's called viability, or the point when a fetus can survive outside the womb, which is generally understood to be about 24 weeks. A full-term pregnancy is 40 weeks. And the hope from anti-abortion activists like Janet Porter is that the fetal heartbeat bill is a way for the U.S. Supreme Court to really change the standard by which women are given the right to have an abortion today.
And just to be clear, what they're saying is a heartbeat, you know, isn't the heartbeat that you and I have.
That's correct. Although it's called a fetal heartbeat bill, a pregnancy is not called a fetus until about 10 weeks. So it's actually an embryo, and it's called fetal cardiac activity. It's sort of a mashup of medical terms. So you have an embryo whose heart is in the process of forming, but the chambers of the heart are not fully formed yet, and there's no circulatory system yet. So the heart is not functioning as an organ that pumps blood through the system. It's sort of a throbbing group of microscopic tissues in a very, very tiny group of cells that's just starting to look like a gummy bear with a tail.
And there is no brain activity as we know it.
That's accurate. So a lot of the time you'll hear anti-abortion campaigners say things like, a heartbeat means life. But it's not the only indication that doctors use. So it's a bit of a mix-up of medical standards, a lot like the term late-term abortion. Well, a doctor would refer to something late-term as post 40 weeks into a pregnancy. But late-term abortion is sort of adopting that medical term and redefining it to elicit emotions to try and pass this legislation through.
All right, back to Porter herself. There's also the question of her tactics. She likes her stunts, does she not?
She very much does like stunts. And I would say the one that sticks with me is when they were able to arrange so-called testimony from a fetus in utero via sonogram.
This was arranged with the help of the aforementioned Steve King.
And the theme of this bill is if a heartbeat is detected, the baby is protected.
So they had this ultrasound of a pregnant woman's womb.
And there that little guy is.
Inside of a congressional hearing.
Now, as we discussed earlier, Porter's been kind of hidden in plain view for quite a while. There's a 1998 piece in the New York Times about her with the headline, "The Architect of the Gay Conversion Campaign." And in that piece, a source describes Porter as being an issue entrepreneur, someone who tries to pick the hot new issues. What, apart from conversion therapy, which, by the way, is now outlawed in a number of states, what were her issues?
Some of her issues were developing support groups for so-called ex-gays, people who had left what Christian nationalists would describe as the homosexual lifestyle. At that time, it was popular for people on the right and Christian nationalists to describe a homosexual agenda that was sweeping the country when people were fighting for marriage. So she was one of the architects of these kind of campaigns where people would call news media and they would sort of act as a witness to news media about, well, homosexuality is a choice.
She was also a birther, believing that Barack Obama was a Muslim Kenyan. This is a woman who was fired by a Christian radio network. And for what?
For becoming too dominionist. And that's the idea that the laws of the United States should more closely mimic the laws of the Bible, and that the Bible and God should be a central feature of the laws of the United States.
I'm asking God, swing the doors open for influence. I am praying for the kingdom of God more influence than Oprah Winfrey, than the network television anchors.
And so that's where you see a lot of bills coming forward to put "In God We Trust" plaques in courtrooms. And essentially, I think of it as a form of Christian supremacy in that it's really saying that other religions will be tolerated, but this religion is sort of above the others and should be a part of the laws of the United States.
I want to play a piece of tape for you. It is Porter speaking to televangelist Jim Baker.
Ohio Right to Life called for Governor Kasich to veto the nation's most protective pro-life bill. And yes, John Kasich heartlessly vetoed that bill.
What's the excuse to
give? You know, the court's not ready. We better not try because we might fail. That's absolutely absurd. I mean, we won the election. I mean, people realize Donald Trump has promised, and he is already appointing pro-life judges to fill the vacancies on the Supreme Court.
She's shocked that Republicans would so sacrifice principle to judicial reality as to compromise their beliefs. But Porter believes life begins at conception. Her legislation defines life as beginning with this so-called fetal heartbeat, which is 6 weeks later into gestation. Now, as you've said, that standard has nothing to do with human physiology, but why would a true believer who thinks abortion is murder legislate a six-week exemption? Based on her beliefs, wouldn't that be murder too? Why the compromise? What's her strategy?
Well, at 6 weeks, most women don't know they're pregnant. And so she's through this strategy, able to outlaw about 90% of abortions. And she wouldn't tell me exactly what her next piece of legislation was going to be. I asked, but she later said to me, well, life begins at conception and we'll work on that later. I think her idea is that let's start by outlawing the vast, vast majority of abortions. And then from there, once we have favorable court precedent, then we can move to life begins at conception. So, yes, her statements about the reality of the courts and other Republicans not supporting this versus her own strategy do conflict.
In any event, we now see all of these bills across the country. I mean, it is a deluge. Obviously, the composition of the court has changed. Is this flood of abortion legislation directly resulting from that, or is it something larger?
I think of it as two things. First, the quantity of anti-abortion legislation has not necessarily changed very much. It's the type of anti-abortion legislation. And that has moved from the gradual and incremental approach of shutting down clinics and limiting women's access to abortion to these outright bans, which fly in the face of Roe and are sort of challenging the courts to overturn Roe versus Wade. And I think there is a lot of focus on the U.S. Supreme Court right now because of Brett Kavanaugh, who is Catholic and who has some but very few legal decisions which indicate that he would most likely move to restrict Roe versus Wade. But I think the other thing that's really important about this is the number of federal court judges that the Trump administration has been able to successfully confirm. Very socially conservative federal court judges. The reason that's important is because it could set up a situation where you have a district court or an appellate court who rules that these laws are legal. That is a situation where they're hoping maybe we can force the U.S. Supreme Court to take it up this way. So it's not just Brett Kavanaugh. But I think when you look at the courts, and this is something that Christian nationalists and social conservatives have focused on for a long time, the successes are big. They have managed to really confirm a large number of very important positions.
Courts and state legislatures. But there's no evidence that the American public has changed its views about abortion, is there?
So although we're talking about this and these new abortion bans as if there's this tidal wave of support from voters, that's not accurate. What has changed is the kind of debate that's been allowed into the mainstream, the kind of candidates that are being elected in state legislatures because of gerrymandering. And so you're seeing this sort of infrastructure on the right that was built in order to further this kind of legislation, and it's successfully done that. So you have legislatures, courts, political organization through things like churches and through grassroots efforts like Janet Porter's that have managed to bring this kind of legislation to fruition, but it's not a change in public opinion.
The court has flip-flopped repeatedly over the years on some issues with nary a consideration to precedent. It's not unthinkable that abortion would follow the same pattern, is it?
You will hear people like Janet Porter and Roy Moore and other people really on the fringes of the anti-abortion debate reference the Dred Scott decision all the time, which was the decision which more or less provided legal grounds for slavery. And so, you know, maybe Roe versus Wade, which they view as wrong as Dred Scott, will be overturned one day. And maybe abortion will be like slavery. This is a comparison that campaigners make on a somewhat regular basis. And in fact, one of the things that a Christian nationalist said to me that made me jump out of my skin when I was interviewing them was, maybe in the future there will be a scenario in which the United States has some states which allow abortion and some states which don't, which campaigners refer to this as a culture of life or a culture of death, and maybe that will cause a civil war. And who can say? That's up for your generation to decide.
So in the course of all of this, Porter has gotten some attention. She's been entertained more than once by Mike Pence, who is the Vice President of the United States. Is she, in fact, the engine that is making all of this run? Are we giving her more credit than she deserves?
In some ways, I think it's the reality that shifted around Janet Porter as opposed to Janet Porter finally gaining traction. It's like the entire infrastructure was set up in such a way that these extreme laws were more and more likely to come to fruition. And Janet Porter just happened to be there with the law ready to go.
Jessica, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jessica Glenza covers health for The Guardian. Her profile of Janet Porter is called The Anti-Gay Extremist Behind America's Fiercely Strict Abortion Bans. Coming up, an immigrant-hating nationalist demagogue in the White House, but not the one you're thinking of. This is On the Media.